It's Friday, December 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, at least 16 people die in a firebomb attack at a Cairo nightclub. Chinese President Xi Jinping announces new financial assistance for Africa.
It adds up to zero interest loans for African countries, assistance with scholarships and training that will likely affect thousands of people.
And we hear about an auction related to the newest Star Wars film. It's all ahead. Well, Egyptian officials are saying at least 16 people were killed early Friday in a Molotov cocktail attack on a nightclub in Cairo. I'm joined now by VOA's Cairo correspondent Heather Murdoch. Heather, what is known so far about this attack?
There's been a wide range of conflicting reports as to who conducted this attack and why. Unnamed security officials have put out there that it was an employee of the club that had a fight with the management. They've also put out there that there were some young men who tried to get in the club and were rejected and later came back with a motorcycle and threw the bomb. There's been witnesses that said that they were inside the club and witnesses that said they were outside the club. So far, not much is really known about who the attackers are and why they did the attack.
Is there any possibility this could be terrorist-related?
Well, I think that's the biggest fear. I mean, it would make sense that the knee-jerk reaction of security officials would be to say it's not terrorist-related because that would be a large problem for the city of Cairo and Egypt as a whole. So, yes, it is. People are afraid that it is terrorist-related, related to Islamic State militants that have been conducting attacks in the Sinai Peninsula and occasionally inside Cairo and other parts of Egypt.
Well, because of the unrest in Egypt in the last several years, the country's tourist industry, which has been a big part of its economy, has been badly hit. I mean, could this, in addition, make its tourist industry decline even more?
Yes, this is probably another blow to the tourism industry. At the end of October, there was a plane crash coming out of one of the largest resorts in Egypt, and that has pretty much killed the business of that part of Egypt. However, Cairo is not considered as damaged by this plane crash, but if they are attacking restaurants, if in fact this was a terrorist attack, it could be another large blow to the tourism industry here.
All right. Thanks very much, Heather. That's Heather Murdoch reporting from Cairo. For reaction on social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Olin Akisholo.
Hey, Sarah. Well, the news has been breaking on social media, and Cairo, where the firebombing occurred, it's actually a trending topic on Twitter this morning. From what I've been reading, security officials aren't calling this an act of terrorism yet, but people are reacting a lot like we've seen after recent terror attacks in Paris and Lebanon, saying they're shocked and their prayers are with the victims. The Guardian has tweeted out a video that purports to show the aftermath of the bombing, originally played on Egyptian TV, although it looks like it was taken on a cell phone, and you can see smoke and a pretty large fire streaming out of the restaurant's doorway and a crowd of people surrounding the building. It's hosted on YouTube, and a lot of people are starting to share that video on social media. But the news is still breaking, so the discourse will probably change and continue to develop as it goes around on social media.
Well, what else is trending on social media?
Another social media trend this morning is Scott Weiland. He's the former lead singer for rock groups Stone Temple Pilots and Velvet Revolver, and sadly he died this morning at the age of 48. He was found dead on a tour bus in Minnesota. The cause of his death is not yet known, but he had a well-documented battle with drug addiction. A lot of people are posting their condolences on social media, although many people also saying they're not that surprised, claiming he wasn't in the best shape at concerts in recent years. Former musicians who had worked with Weiland in the past, such as Slash, have tweeted out condolences. Slash tweeted out an Instagram photo, a link to an Instagram photo, rather, with a picture of the singer and the text, "Sad day, rest in peace, Scott Weiland." That has been retweeted more than 1,000 times in just over 2 hours this morning.
Oh, very sad. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Olin. That's International Edition's Olin Akisholo. Well, meanwhile, prayer vigils were held across San Bernardino County in California Thursday evening following the shooting rampage during a holiday party at a social services agency by a husband and wife who killed 14 people and wounded 21. Officials say they still do not know what prompted Syed Rizwan Farooq and his wife Tashfeen Malik to open fire on the man's co-workers. Well, since taking office, U.S. President Barack Obama has spoken out or issued statements about 15 mass shootings. But changing gun laws isn't as easy as many think. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti explains why gun control is such a difficult issue in the U.S. Congress.
Every mass shooting, like the recent one that killed 14 in California, has President Barack Obama pleading for laws to change.
We're going to have to, I think, search ourselves as a society to make sure that we can take basic steps that would make it harder, not impossible, but harder for individuals to get access to weapons.
And all these are 9mm.
But it's not easy to change laws for three reasons. The first is tradition. Some say the Second Amendment to the Constitution gives Americans the right to own guns. Vin Weber is a former Republican congressman, now a lobbyist.
It is part of the American mythological experience that gun ownership is central to our identity as a country.
The second reason is the National Rifle Association. The NRA has spent $10 million over the last 3 years to lobby for gun rights. The $300 million organization has 4 million members.
The NRA is powerful because they represent real people who get involved in the political process and express themselves and vote and are active.
Typically, Democrats propose gun control laws. Republicans defeat them. Democrat Chuck Schumer.
Unless the American people make their voices heard, the gridlock on this issue will not change.
But that's the third reason. A Pew survey found Americans divided, with 52% supporting gun rights over gun control.
But also reflects this sense among many Americans, not all, that gun ownership, the reason to own a gun is for personal protection.
Mr. President, we're calling you out to stop whining about what you can't do.
This group wants President Obama to bypass Congress and pressure these men, the top gun manufacturers, to reveal distribution lines and to punish dealers whose guns are involved in crimes.
We're not asking to control guns. We're asking to make sure that guns that shouldn't be in the hands of criminals are not in their hands.
Some say the shootings won't end until something is done. But how to get it done is still unknown. In Washington, Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Astronomers say an exoplanet found orbiting its star at an incredibly great distance may have been booted from its original closer location to the star in a way similar to what some think took place in our own solar system's early history. The astronomers noticed a possible ring of debris around the planet and an oddly shaped comet belt in its solar system. The scientists said both of these anomalies suggest a violent gravitational disturbance may have been behind the exoplanet's exile to a location some 16 times the distance between Pluto and our sun. A study released by Canadian researchers in November suggests that we may have had an additional planetary gas giant in our solar system around 4 billion years ago until Jupiter pushed it out. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about an auction relating to the newest Star Wars film. Chinese President Xi Jinping Friday announced $60 billion of assistance and loans for Africa as he was speaking to a summit of African leaders in Johannesburg. I'm joined now by VOA Southern Africa correspondent Anita Powell, who's in Joburg. Anita, what is known about this particular, you know, program of these, I guess they're loans and other assistance that the Chinese president is offering African countries?
Right. So this is announcement of $60 billion in assistance and loans. It adds up to zero interest loans for African countries, assistance with scholarships and training that will likely affect thousands of people. We did see this coming. I mean, whenever President Xi comes to Africa, he drops billions of dollars left and right. I think the amount was definitely surpassed expectations. But as President Xi said the night before in a speech at the banquet ahead of the summit, you know, China's really committed to deepening its relationship with Africa, and I don't think there could be a clearer sign of that than $60 billion.
Yes, well, certainly over the last few years, China has done quite a bit of investment on the African continent. But do these assistance and, you know, loans, do they come with strings? Is it known about that?
So that's also something that President Xi has addressed. He has said that China will continue its policy of non-interference on the continent. So according to the Chinese perspective, no, it doesn't come with certain strings, and that's maybe a little bit of a slight at other donor nations, especially the United States, who does, you know, ask for conditions. It's interesting because I think it's clear that the relationship between Africa and China is changing, and China, even though it says it wants to continue the policy of non-interference, they're giving military assistance to African countries, they're giving military assistance to the African Union, and they recently built a Navy logistical base in the tiny East African nation of Djibouti. Some could say that that does not look like non-interference at all. So, you know, according to the official Chinese policy, this money, you know, is in line with the policy of non-interference, but I think we might be seeing a shift.
And what about the reaction of all this is getting from African leaders, such as South African President Jacob Zuma or Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari?
Well, obviously, African leaders are ecstatic whenever the Chinese president comes to visit them because it does add up to billions and billions of dollars. Jacob Zuma, the president of South Africa, says that South Africa and China have a very special relationship. As you know, they're both members of the economic bloc known as BRICS. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And, you know, he hailed the $6.5 billion that China gave to South Africa earlier this week as a sign of that. So I think African leaders are generally very excited and say that they're committed to a relationship with China.
All right. Thanks very much, Anita. That's VOA's Southern Africa correspondent, Anita Powell, reporting from Johannesburg. In Bangkok, a meeting of senior regional government officials called for greater coordinated action in dealing with irregular migration in the Indian Ocean. Ron Corbin reports for VOA from the Thai capital.
The meeting Friday of senior officials and experts on irregular migration follows a similar meeting in May that was called to deal with a humanitarian crisis of thousands of boat people stranded at sea. Most of those on the move are Muslim Rohingya, fleeing repressive policies in western Myanmar and impoverished Bangladeshi nationals seeking employment in Muslim Malaysia and Indonesia. On Friday, Thai Foreign Minister Don Pramudwinai called for concerted long-term action to tackle irregular migration.
It's clear that we need an explicit and efficient mechanism to manage and control the negative impacts of irregular migration. We must always keep in mind that irregular migration has a human face. We must therefore do all that we can to uphold our humanitarian traditions and the very sanctity of human life itself.
The United Nations International Office for Migration, in its latest situation report, said of the more than 5,500 people who departed from Myanmar and Bangladesh between May 10 and July 30, more than 1,900 remain in shelters and immigration detention centres in Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia and Myanmar. More than 2,200 Bangladeshi boat people had returned to Bangladesh with IOM assistance. The Rohingya remain stateless. Myanmar authorities do not recognise them as one of the country's ethnic groups. Authorities refer to them as Bengalis, with laws imposing tight restrictions on movement and employment. Thai Foreign Minister Don says the issue needs to be addressed comprehensively by all stakeholders, ranging from prevention to cure, and include economic development support in regions to reduce the push that leads to the Muslim Rohingya and Bangladeshis setting off on boats. At a later press conference, Don expressed hope sustainable solutions will be found to avoid future crises.
Hopefully. We feel it, we want it, and we're looking forward to it, the sustainable solution. But it might not come from this second meeting, but we have to put our earnest hope and all the efforts combined, all participants to be able to attain this goal.
Senior diplomats told VOA the Thai government wants to have a dialogue with Myanmar for a plan of action so both countries can avoid the paralysis that occurred in May when thousands of irregular migrants were abandoned at sea. Diplomats say how quickly elected National League for Democracy NLD leader Aung San Suu Kyi responds to the proposals will be key once her party assumes power next year. IOM's Director General William Swing said further regional dialogue was necessary to ensure long-term solutions were in place.
It is not so much a migration problem to be solved. It's much more a human reality to be managed. Therefore, everything depends now on regularity of meetings, having a dialogue that continues. As you work with some of these issues that are both complex and intense, so you have to keep the dialogue going.
The next step will be a March meeting in Indonesia of foreign ministers from the 45-nation Bali process to address irregular migration and what diplomats say is expected to provide strong capacity building to support the outcome of meetings in Thailand. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. The next installment of the Star Wars movie series, Star Wars: The Force Awakens, opens in theaters this month. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, an auction will give fans the chance to own a piece of movie history.
Awakening. Have you felt it?
It has been nearly 40 years since Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Princess Leia, and Darth Vader came to our world from a galaxy far, far away. Now Sotheby's is holding its first ever auction of Star Wars memorabilia, including props, action figures, and other items associated with the films. Hundreds of rare and original collectibles associated with Star Wars will go on the block December 11th in New York. James Gallo is the owner of Toy and Comic Heaven. He says that fans have the chance to own some of the original action figures from 1977 to 1985.
There's over 400 carded action figures from that time frame, which is both a great assortment of stuff and a very high number of figures.
Among the figures are some original Luke Skywalker figures with a two-piece lightsaber in its original packaging. The figure is expected to fetch between $12,000 and $18,000 at auction. James Gallo says that having the extremely rare figure is something special.
I mean, there's probably a dozen or so really rare and significant items in the sale. There's a double telescoping Luke Skywalker on the card, which originally the lightsaber figures, the Luke, the Ben Kenobi, and the Darth Vader had a two-piece lightsaber. It was very quickly changed out to a one-piece lightsaber. So it's a very rare item to have that. There's approximately about 20, 25 noting samples of that on the card.
Also up for sale are masks, including an Imperial Stormtrooper and Darth Vader, made from the molds for Star Wars Revenge of the Sith. An autographed lightsaber carried by actor Samuel L. Jackson in the Star Wars prequel trilogy is also available. James Gallo says the sale, which is from the collection of Japanese designer Nigo, even offers something that fans got when there was no Star Wars memorabilia, a promissory certificate from the toy companies.
We have the very first Star Wars action figure item that was produced, which is the store display for the Early Bird certificate package. This item was produced for Christmas of 1977, so the movie came out in May 1977. Nobody expected it to be a hit, so there was no way to get any toy product to market for Christmas time. So Kenner came up with the idea of basically selling an empty envelope, and it's basically a cardboard backdrop with a mail-in certificate that when you mailed it in, they said, hey, in 4 months, you'll get, you know, a set of four figures in the mail.
Other items up for sale include a set of seven action figures from The Empire Strikes Back that were only sold at Sears stores in Canada. Two framed sets of 62 aluminum coins offered with the figures are available for bid as well. The online auction is December 11th at Sotheby's.com/Star Wars Auction and eBay.com/Sotheby's. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Barack Obama has called on the leaders of Turkey and Russia to de-escalate tensions following the downing of a Russian warplane by Turkey last month and to focus on the common threat posed by ISIL and the need to make progress on a political resolution in Syria. The president met with both leaders on the sidelines of the climate change summit in Paris. He expressed regret to Russian President Vladimir Putin over the loss of Russian life, while emphasizing the need to avoid steps that will hinder a political resolution to the Syrian conflict, a key step to defeating ISIL. In remarks after meeting with Turkish President Recep Erdogan, President Obama reiterated his commitment to the security of Turkey and praised Turkey for its generous support for the refugees fleeing the violence in Syria. President Obama expressed hope that in the coming months, Russia will see that using its military to prop up the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad will not succeed in ending the Syrian conflict. Apart from the moral question of the legitimacy of a leader who has killed hundreds of thousands of his own people, President Obama said, as a practical matter, it is impossible for Mr. Assad to bring that country together. I don't expect that you're going to see a 180-degree turn on the Russian strategy over the next several weeks, said President Obama. They have invested for years now in keeping Assad in power. That's going to take some time for them to change how they think about the issue. But President Obama said it is possible over the next several months that we see a shift in calculation in the Russians and a recognition that it's time to bring the civil war in Syria to a close. What can happen, said President Obama, is if the political process in Vienna aimed at ending the war continues to make progress, then we could see at least pockets of ceasefires in and around Syria. That may mean that certain opposition groups no longer find themselves subject to either Syrian or Russian bombing. They are then in a conversation about politics. And slowly, President Obama said, we then are able to get everybody's attention diverted to where it needs to be. And that is going after ISIL in a systematic way.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.